time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 20th of May 2012. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday, the 20th of May, Sharon Brown talked to participants in the recent Theatre of Resistance, and she talked to some of the people involved in the upcoming Youth Week.
Okay, great. So, we've got Anna Main here, who is in Theatres of Resistance, but is also an artist herself, performing artist. And hi, Anna.
Good morning, Morena.
So tell us, so you helped organise Theatres of Resistance, and we had you on before a little bit talking about, what was going to be on. And so what did you make of that? Did it all go well for you? Did it meet your expectations?
Yes, it's the third year for Theatres of Resistance this year. So Theatres of Resistance, our acronym is TOR, T-O-R. TOR 12 went well. Our steering committee, we worked on it for about 3 months, putting the program together, and like the previous years, we actually had more people bring work to us, which Carol Winstanley and Janet Silas put together in a program, and it went really well. It'd be good to get more people there. The first one that we had on the 28th was the same day as the Hikoi. So we had a live feed in from that, which was wonderful, thanks to Hugh Ross, who took
and
all
Anna's
the
phone.
Yes, iPhone, yes. Wonderful main themes. Your Denniston play went really well. Main themes are basically looking at the TPPA and how secretive that is and how dangerous that may be for New Zealand. We had Peter Rickus talking about, he did a poem actually and a skit, some real interesting focus there on Māoridom and our relations. And then the environmental theme was huge as well. But no, wonderful to be involved with, and just encourage anyone. It's a forum for anyone in the community to perform a play or a poem or music, Ross coming up, or a song, to give voice to issues that people in the community and public have.
Mm, great. Okay. And you've got a little performance piece that you wanted to do. Would you like to do that now?
Sure.
Do you want to introduce it, or you're just going to do it?
Oh, I'll give a wee introduction. This piece, morena everyone, this piece is called Yes PM, No PM, 20 Questions. So Yes Prime Minister, No Prime Minister, 20 Questions. And it's about my big issue, as like on everyone's top of mind at the moment, is trying to prevent future land sales of Aotearoa. So we've got to do what we can to protect New Zealand from foreign ownership. And this is my piece to the Prime Minister or parliamentary members of the Overseas Investment Office, or anyone who is thinking that it's actually the right thing to do. So this is my attempt to get people to rethink and to look at some core values surrounding the land and Aotearoa, and just have a bit of a think about, are you actually right in wanting to rid of our land and assets? So, Yes PM, No PM, 20 questions. 1. Prime Minister, do you understand what taonga tuku iho means? Land guardianship forever. The land is treasured forever. PM, do you understand what tikanga is? The right approach to all things. Do you know who Papatūānuku is? Do you agree that it is she, Papatūānuku, our Mother Earth, who feeds us? Prime Minister, do you understand what a kaitiaki is? Guardian, not owner. Do you understand what kaitiakitanga means? Guardianship of all land and resources for future generations. Prime Minister, are you a kaitiaki? Prime Minister, would you sell your own mother? 9. Do we really need the OIO, Overseas Investment Office? Do any Māori or women sit on this team making decisions about the future of Aotearoa soil? PM, if we scrapped the OIO for an alternative way, could the New Zealand dollar rise? Have you heard of the American Native people saying, you cannot eat money? Do you not think our land is for all New Zealanders and therefore it is priceless? Prime Minister, do you know what kaupapa is? Prime Minister, what is your kaupapa? Why do you do what you do? As a Pākehā, I ask you, Prime Minister, is selling 1 inch of Aotearoa honouring our partnership agreed in the treaty? This document was to give a voice to both Pākehā and Māori at the time of colonisation. Well, now, PM, have English, Irish, Scottish, Welsh, Indian, Chinese, Australian, American, Samoan. This list goes on. New Zealanders, generations of people born off this land, who too feel Wairua and who want to protect Aotearoa, who will protect it. PM, can you and others please learn and begin to feel Wairua, your own connection with the land, and live and breathe and respect our land, Aotearoa? Prime Minister, do you know what Taonga Tuku Iho means? Do you understand that it is she, Papatūānuku, our Mother Earth, who feeds us? Prime Minister, would you sell your own mother?
Wow. Really, really interesting piece of work.
Thank you, yeah.
Yeah. It's something to think about, isn't it?
Yeah.
That notion of the earth and how we relate to it.
Mm. And it all is connected.
Mm.
One
of the things I noticed with the Denniston play, and especially looking at open cast mining, is, you know, some people think that there must be something spiritually very wrong with us that we can allow the earth to be scarred and damaged in such a way. And I think it ties into that as well, that thing of, you know, totally destroying the earth and not having any connection to it and
Recognizing
what it provides to us.
That's right. And I think, you know, people that are out there working 9 to 5 and plugging away to pay mortgages and even the parliamentarians, you know, I do think that it would be worth getting out there in the bush and smelling the earth and looking into a river or a pond. And that's what Wairua is. Why is water, and rua is too. So you look into a pond. I got taught this by my te reo teacher in Taupō, where I work off island, and you simply look over into the pond and see your own reflection. So you have yourself and your reflection in the water, and it's a nice reminder that we are connected to the earth. You know, we are just simply part of the universe. And if I can, through this piece of art, remind a few people to look at these beautiful Māori doctrines. We have so much to learn from the culture, and there's certainly been an improvement in the last 15 or 20 years. I think myself, it came from the Kohanga Reo being set up. I was a kid when that happened, I think, sort of 80s. And it's getting better, but there's a lot more we can
So Anna, are you yourself Pākehā, or have you got some Māori?
Yeah. No,
right, but you've taken an interest in
I'm definitely Pākehā through and through, but I you know, as I say in this piece, we're born of this land, and I feel I'm a New Zealander. I feel, you know, like Māori. The tangata whenua will always be special as the native people of New Zealand, but when you're born here and you feel the Wairua and you understand the Māori values of the land and how special and how spiritual it is, I have those feelings, so I'll do what I can to help get the message across that we need to protect it and to further the wonderment and the beauty of Māori culture in our own culture.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. And how do you think we can communicate that with people in New Zealand? Because often I think if you're part Māori, then you feel connected to some of those Māori values. But if you're not Māori, often people seem to be disconnected or
even
sometimes resentful, and that's with the sometimes with the immigrant population, sometimes with the, you know, Pākehā New Zealand population. But then of course there are Pākehā and immigrants who are very much embrace these values. So I'm always curious how we approach things so that people don't feel threatened but feel encouraged by a participation and awareness.
Yes, I think that in answer to your question, it's through education and it's through people wanting to be educated themselves. That's why I've mentioned tongatuku iho, tikanga, papatūānuku, kaitiaki, you know, some of these key Māori doctrines and words. Another beautiful one is mana ake, which is the uniqueness of the individual. So I think Māori are very embracing. It's all about New Zealand as one, you know. And so we have to educate where we can and be embraced. But I do think New Zealand, we sit in a very unique situation with Māori, and we're trying to better our relations all the time, which is the only way ahead for New Zealand, I do believe. It is through education. So the schools, the primary schools, the high schools, but adults, certainly adults, if we're through the schooling and through the university system, we've got to take it upon ourselves to learn what we can. I myself am going to learn te reo, and embrace each other and just be kind through the whole process.
Mm. Okay, and Ross B has just walked in, and I heard him for the first time at the Theatres of Resistance, and my, what a lovely voice and a great song. So Ross, would you like to talk a little bit about the song, or would you just like to play?
Oh, I can say a couple of things, I suppose. A couple of things. One is the song was all about the change of Waiheke, and Waiheke being the girl, the woman, and it's about how we've got to accept some changes, and some changes we really can't. But it's unique, and it's a unique sound as well, probably.
Lovely. So this is Waiheke Girl by Ross B.
Thank you. Shoes at all, kind of like nothing to lose. She has no money, but then again, who cares anyway? I've seen her walking in the park on a Saturday and a Sunday, and on a sandy white beach any day, every day. If you've seen her around here, tell me she is still with us at all. this island, it doesn't quite give me the same emotion. Can anybody else see that? See that? Doesn't quite give it the same emotion. Let me jog your memory. Remember the old bungalow east on Itangi. It simply got washed away. Simply got washed away. Is there something we can say about that? Is there somebody we can blame for that? I'm sick of all the cars, sick of all the curbing and the cussing around it. Everything seems to be changing its look. I'm getting off my ear. Sometimes I wonder why I'm even still here. Maybe I'm just looking for, maybe I'm just looking for the old Waiheke. Everything seems to be coming and going around here, just like the old Baruna did. These new faces, they're changing our places, of these wider streets of which we now live. I was walking in the streets on a sunny day, and I say g'day, and I hear nothing at all. Eric the Red, Eric the Red once said, say goodbye to how it was, say hello to how it is. Say goodbye to how it was, say hello to how it is. Oh yeah.
Wow, that was great. I love the way you do the percussion and the guitar as well. Great. Really nice. It's got quite a Dylan sound to it. Is that someone that you are quite inspired by?
It's in the Big Influence of mine, along with a few others.
Yeah. No, that's magical. And it's always, I always really enjoy hearing songs about the place or seeing films about the place that I live in.
Yes.
I think it's really different. It has a really different energy to having, you know, I don't know, commercial stuff that comes from somewhere else. That, you know, just that you can refer to like a batch in Onitangi that we remember, or, yes, you know, Eric the Red. That, you know, it wasn't until I heard you mention Eric the Red that I realised that I haven't seen him for ages and ages. What? Where is he?
Eric the Red, he's moved off the island. And he's living in West Auckland, I heard, with his sister. His health has gone down. So he's left the island. But he very much was that iconic figure walking around. Everybody enjoyed him, all the different types of people on the island just thought, oh, he's different. And he had his own little, you know, he had his own little thing going on here, which is what it's all about.
And did he connect with a lot of people? Because I always saw him as a figure, but I didn't know him.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, because he'd been here so long, so, you know, he grew over those years here, changing. And, you know, it's not as though it's a short time. It's been, I think he's been here 20, 25, 30 years, and a lot of people got to know him.
Yeah, tremendous. And I think, you know, also, you know, songs kind of embody the history as well. So it's great, you know, that song will now be around, and it's, you know, it's lovely. Do you do other different stuff as well?
Yeah, I do all my songs. I have about 10 Waiheke songs.
So, oh, great. And awesome. Do you ever perform them, or, I mean?
No, I don't ever perform them.
Have you ever thought of performing them somewhere?
Not really.
Right, okay. Because, yeah. I mean, obviously you did it at Tour, but it would be lovely to, you know, have an evening of...
Tour 13, Ross.
We'll just we can even rename it for you if that's an issue, eh? Ross 13. Ross B 13.
Yeah, no, I'd love to have you there, Ross, doing a few at least. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just, it's lovely. So thanks for that, yeah. And is there something else that you wanted to play at some point?
No,
we can talk about it. That's all good. Okay, thanks. Right, thank you. Okay, so, well, I guess then, Anna, you've been quite involved. You work for a, well, that's probably irrelevant, but you've been quite interested in this Crafer Farm sale, especially, yeah. Haven't you? And you seem to know quite a lot about that.
Well, I know a bit. I know the... been sold now, which is a real shame. I'm not xenophobic or anything like that, but I just think it's time to put a not so much a line in the sand, but a line in the soil, and prevent any future foreign land sales of Aotearoa soil.
What was your particular gripe with that particular sale? Because, I mean, I know when they talked about it and you see it on the news, the people involved were like, why is this sale attracting so much attention? It's a sale like any other. So what makes it different in your view?
Well, in my view, it was the amount of land, 16 dairy farms, and it's the productivity and... revenue that can be earned off that land by the owners, by New Zealanders. Yeah, it was. It's the amount of land, and I just have a strong view that if we can keep it New Zealand owned, then we should. You know, I think Michael Fay had a go, but I'm just wondering in the future, you know, we need to look at the right of purchase if land comes up for sale. And I'd like to see we have the first right of purchase to any land, perhaps, I mean, let's start the debate. I have thought about this. I mean, if land comes up for sale, maybe a person's family has the first right of purchase. If they can't buy it, then second right goes to iwi. Third right to people, other New Zealanders, passport holders who may want it. And then fourthly, foreigners. Let's just try and keep it as ours.
Mm. I mean, I think the other issue around this particular sale that's quite worrying is that it's not going to an individual or a group of people. It's actually going to a foreign government. It's the Chinese government that has bought this land.
Yeah.
I mean, whether they've done it as a state-owned enterprise or whatever, it is essentially another country buying into New Zealand.
Yeah, well, who knows?
Wholesale, which is quite odd.
Yeah, who knows, you know, what went on behind closed doors to for that to happen. But, you know, as the system stands, they've obviously worked through it. You know, it's interesting, in China, you can't buy land, you've got to lease it. And I think, why can't we do the same? You know, colonisation happened and there's been a number of farms leased for 99 years. Those leases are coming up. I'm aware of a number, of particularly one wonderful project where the leases come back into Māori hands around Taupō Way. And the iwi down there have worked hard, and it's now one of the best producing dairy farms around. So I'm in favour of leasing land out rather than selling it. But sort of a two-faced scenario where, you know, no one can go over and buy Chinese land. Why can they do that here? Well, you know, there is a system in place. All I'm saying is, let's start the debate about looking at an alternative way to deal with it. And I think a priority of purchase or first right to purchase is something that needs to be looked at.
And I mean, there's been a lot of concern around maybe the nature of farming changing, or the power base in of the way farms are run here changing as a result of this huge purchase. Do you see that as a risk or not particularly?
Oh, I think that, you know, certainly there's been damage done to the image of the dairy industry, but I actually work in the dairy industry off farm, and, you know, farmers are kaitiaki. They are this is dairy farmers. They're very, very aware, and they have a huge passion for the land and their animals, and are doing what they can to help the environment and the waterways. You know, there's a lot of bad press actually about that, but You know, I've dealt with 92 farmers recently in my job who are all wonderful people and who are abiding to the law, and even, you know, some people regarding effluent are doing incredible things, and their nurturing of the land is pretty incredible. I mean, we do lead the world in this, and we need to be proud of it. I mean, I think dairying's first or second the biggest industry in the country economically, second or first to tourism. And I think that there has been some damage done to the image of dairy farming, but what an incredible industry, and I just hope more people go in and begin work there. In fact, I was at a meeting in Auckland the other night, and there was a refugee man up there speaking that they can't get jobs and they're well qualified, and I suggest they get out of the cities and head out into the country where it's healthy and there's lots of work out there for people.
Right, okay. And what kinds of jobs are out in the country?
Oh, there'd be milking cows, particularly sort of June, July, August. There'd be yearly jobs if they wanted them, but it's farming. It's looking after the animals, fencing, looking after the land, pasture management.
All right, so there's quite a lot of jobs in that area, you think?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For
okay,
sure.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is that, of course, dairy is quite damaging in some of the practices that are done. I noticed that Ross Gillespie, who's often fought up here around boundaries, has got a property somewhere in, I don't know where it would be, somewhere in Taranaki. In any case, he's involved in a huge battle now with Fonterra, who are dumping lots of chemicals and things and milk out of the tanks straight into the spawning river by his house.
They're actually doing that?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And they've been told that, and apparently the town water supply where he lives has actually been moved because it was being contaminated with milk solids.
Yeah,
and,
well, I mean, I certainly can't speak for Fonterra. I mean, I've been working for the independents, trying to grow the competition in the industry. So I can't really comment about that, to be honest. I wish I could. I'll do some reading on it. But all I know that individual farmers with the on-farm streams accord and that sort of thing, you know, fence off waterways, and farmers are good people. Kiwis are good people. They're not out there to rape and pillage the land. You know, there's the farmers care, and they are perfect kaitiaki in their own right, and they're doing what they can. They really are a positive bunch, and you know, get out there, go out there and see what some of these farmers are doing to
Is it hard to be part of a group that's independent of Fonterra? I understood that Fonterra had all the dairy in New Zealand, so I was quite surprised that you worked for an independent
The company. Fonterra is you'd say the largest player in the industry now. In 2001 there was the Dairy Industry Restructuring Act came in. That came in because the foreign buyers of dairy products were thinking that New Zealand was looking like a monopolistic industry, so it was sort of one price coming out with the cooperative being formed. And so the law came in to deregulate a bit and encourage competition in the industry, and that's why these independents have formed, which is a very, very healthy thing. I said to a Fonterra director once at a large herd conference, I was just newly back into dairying after having a break, and I said, look, this is a symbiotic relationship. You know, it's like the little bird on the elephant's back. The competition is there to help the big player survive in the global market. And, so that's it's an important part of our economy, and it's a very positive industry, and it's better placed because of the competition that has come in.
Okay, great. And so getting back to another event that was at Theatres of Resistance, Anu Grace put together a song. Can you tell us a little bit about that song?
Sure. Anu Grace is currently in Australia, but she very much wanted to be part of Theatres of Resistance. And I actually met Anu down at Te Midinga Te Karaka, which is down in Tomranui, a very sacred place for Māoridom, and Pua Waiomsby invited me there And I met Anu, and I was telling her about some soil science that I became aware of about 18 months ago that needs to be in Massey and Lincoln, I believe, for the rejuvenation of soils. There has been a lot of chem fertilizer put on the land, and there's a much better way with just putting natural elements and on the land. So I was talking to her about this science that I'd come across and how I'm going to help educate New Zealand farmers, horticulturalists about it. And it actually inspired Anu to write this song called Oranga Nuku, which is Healthy Soil. And she rang me one day, we were both back on the island, and she said, Anna, I've been up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I've written a song. So between Anu, myself and Puawai Ormsby, we've put this song together, and I think Sharon's going to play it. And it's basically, it says, healthy soil, water and food, healthy people, our Mother Earth, our spiritual connection to Aotearoa is sacred. So yeah, Anu's a very talented woman, and I think she's coming back to the island about October, but her and Laurie are off in up in Brisbane. She's writing some of her own music, but it was wonderful to be able to record this with her, and to see that inspiration come from late night conversation in the WAPS.
Lovely. Well, that's the best way, isn't it? And so this song is called Oranga Nuku, which means healthy soil. Is it?
Yes.
Oh, look at that. How good is that? Great, that was lovely. Okay, so that was Oranga Nuku. And so do you know what Anu's doing in Australia?
I believe that she's having time out and writing her own songs. Yeah, and developing some of her own music.
Oh, lovely. So she might come back with a bit of an album for
maybe
us.
Maybe, yeah. Which great. Is pretty exciting. But yeah, she's performed that with the ukulele, I think back in April, a few weeks or March, in preparation actually for Theatres of Resistance. But I hope this can become a theme song. I might send it down to the local primary school, get the kids and get everyone singing. This is a very embracing and inclusive message for everyone. Yeah, and particularly if we sing it in Te Reo.
Well, I think they're doing a music event at Te Huruhi this term.
Okay.
So that might fit in quite well with them. I can forward it on to that. Them.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yes.
And what about you and your artistic work? Have you got any other projects that you're working on at the moment?
No, I performed a piece last year at Theatres of Resistance entitled Why in 2011 Do Pākehā Wear Pounamu So Proudly. We are actually getting a Facebook up for the Theatres of Resistance content, but at the moment, no, I've written the short skit, the 20 questions skit for Theatres of Resistance, and I don't think I'll be doing any writing for a little while. I want to concentrate on a few other things, but what I am going to be actively involved with is helping our steering committee for Theatres of Resistance get those forums happening more frequently. So we're aiming, I think, every 3 months to have Theatres of Resistance at the theatre, but also monthly cinema nights where YouTube clips are shown and discussion and debate can form around the pieces being shown. So Scott Ewing, he did a wonderful job again, thanks Scott, on the visuals and production for Theatres of Resistance, Carol Winstanley and Peter Rickus are also on the steering committee, and Janet Salas is hugely involved with Playback Theatre, which will continue for the theatre performances. But the committee will be advertising, if you like, on the community notice boards and through Facebook when we're going to have our cinema Theatres of Resistance nights, where we welcome people, I think, to bring koha and have your say on the issues that will be, you know, developed through film.
Right, okay, yeah. So you're favouring that kind of medium then?
Yeah.
But there might be also performance pieces or in a little...
Not at the cinema. That will all be YouTube or films. But every 3 months, we want to have the theatre performances again, which will be music and skits.
Okay.
And so what we've done is we've decided that the 4 hours over 2 days is too long. And we've decided also to have a focus theme and have theatre performances, music, song, dance, whatever genre, focusing on a major theme.
I think that'll be easier for people to get their head round.
Yeah, I think so. And it means we can have, as Peter Rickus calls, a hard hitter, you know, an academic or someone well reputed in the area to come and speak, which will make it an interesting time or relevant time for this person as well to come to the island, so we can look at the issue, whatever it is, at a local, national and global level, and focus and hone in on one issue, which I think will be far more productive.
Mm. And also have some really, as you say, someone who's an expert on the subject,
yeah,
rather than people, you know, because it's nice for people to express how they feel,
mm,
but if they're expressing how they feel with very little knowledge apart from, mm, you know,
well, that's right.
About something, it's actually quite nice to have someone who's an expert that can answer people's questions.
Absolutely, and it's incredible, you know, once you get a forum like this going, and people do express themselves, how much everyone can learn about that. And I think it's really important. That's a key point, that it's about awareness of issues. I know, you know, I'm unaware of so many issues, but Theatres of Resistance, certainly in the last 3 years, has opened my eyes up to a number of issues, thanks to the community and to the people involved. We have to be aware to if we want any change. You know, if you put your head in the sand, it's no good. Yeah.
Mm. Okay, great. So, well, thanks for that, and good luck with that, and I'm sure we'll see more on Theatres of Resistance, and yeah.
Thank you, Sean.
And now we have a whole bunch of people who've come in for to talk about Waiheke Youth Week. So we've got Maggie, who's a school nurse, and we've got Magda.
Hello.
And Haya and Taylor. Hello, welcome.
Thank you.
So tell us about Youth Week. What's going on Waiheke for Youth Week, and when is it?
So when is that?
Well, I might let Magda go ahead and tell you all about
it. Well, Youth Week's a year that's celebrated every... a week that is celebrated every year. And this week we decided that there kind of wasn't enough stuff on the island for youth. And so we kind of thought, why don't we accumulate the forces of PCSP team, which is a support team on Waiheke at Waiheke High School, and some other community groups to kind of make this exciting week for us. And the day that we're having, the main focus of it, is on the 27th, so next Sunday, down at the skate park. And we've got Levi Hawken, who most of you probably know, is coming along. He's going to do some skating and signing. And for those of you who don't know his name, it's actually the Nick Minute guy. And there's going to be stalls and stuff down there as well. And so, yeah, it'll be good. And we've got some events running up to that as well.
Lovely. Great. Oh, that's exciting. And what are some of the other events?
On the 24th, which is the Wednesday, I believe, we're going to have Stefano's doing discounted pizzas for youth. And then the next day, the Thursday, Waiheke Cinema are doing discounted tickets to the Hunger Games, which is not out on Waiheke yet, so that'll be cool.
Sorry, that's on the Friday, isn't it?
Yeah, so we're doing
it's
the Thursday.
It's on Friday. I was wrong there, sorry. Thursday and Friday night.
Yeah, Thursday's the pizza day and Friday's
the movies.
Ah, okay, great. And how do people book these things? Are there a limited number of tickets to the cinema?
Well, as the cinemas, you know, I mean, the cinema can take as many as it can, but it's not, I assume it wouldn't probably be different to any other booking.
Yeah.
Book if you want to make sure that you've got a ticket.
Yes, I suspect you should, because the cinema doesn't fit that many people. So if you really want to go along with a bunch of your mates, you should probably book it. And yeah, pizzas will probably be more flexible, but it's probably always a good idea to book, isn't it? Yeah. Now, the other thing I wanted to say is that I made a film called Waiheke Our Place, which some of you may have been involved in, but in any case, it was filmed on Waiheke, and Ben Cara did the music, and Nawi.
Oh, yes.
Nawi filmed it. And Tracy, you were in it?
Yeah.
Yes, that's probably why I recognise you. And Tracy Puawai was in it, but also there were lots of kids from the high school that were in it, and we're going to be showing that before the Hunger Games. So I think the Hunger Games starts at 7:30, and you have to pay to get into that, but at 6:45, everyone is welcome to come and see the film Our Place that was made, and there'll probably be some nibbles, and that is thanks to the council. So, and that's a free event. So, also at the cinema. Great.
Come along.
It'll yes, come along. And lovely. And have you ladies been organising this event? Or these events?
Yes. Well, we've been, yeah, as I said, we've been working with YATA, which is Youth Attitudes Towards Alcohol. And it was kind of some council people, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Really lovely people who've come in and helped us organise this stuff. I mean, we're high school kids, so we don't really have the resources that they do. And so it's been really helpful to have some community help to get us together and, you know, actually making something happen rather than just sitting around and being lazy high school kids that we are. No, we're not. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well, I have to say it's quite interesting because it's, you know, you all look incredibly enterprising, but it can be really hard to find youth who want to do stuff. And I don't know, is there a way, I mean, how do you guys, you know, when you're an adult, as I sometimes think of myself, when you want to do something and you want to tap into to an event that might be nice for youth or set something up or get people involved in what they would like and there might be a little bit of money around, how does one access people who could, you know, be involved in making that happen and have events that aren't put on for youth by adults, but actually get people involved to do stuff? Is there a strategy that one can
adopt? I think it's difficult. I think it's very difficult, and we're trying to get clever at it, and we try to improve on that so that when the event happens, it has been thought up by the students, which we're really hoping that's what this event is all about. One of the ways we've tapped into the students is that at the high school, we do have a group of students which we call the Peer Sexuality Support Program. It's a really popular program, and the students have to apply to be on the team, and they go away to a camp for 3 nights to learn all about sexual health. And it's a very popular program, and the students are very keen to get on it, and it's quite competitive. So we've actually used this team of students to tap into and organise other events, such as this one on Sunday for Youth Week. And
sorry, what's the name of this group?
Peer Sexuality Support Program.
Oh, okay, it's a very strange name. What
it
does
is.
It mean?
We call it PSSP, and it actually means you have a small group of students within the high school that have been away to workshops and learnt all about sexual health, and so their friends can tap into their knowledge. So sometimes if they don't want to talk to their parents or they don't want to go up and ask the school nurse, they can ask their friends for some information, and usually what happens is those friends will direct them to the school nurse or someone that can help them.
Right. So given the fact that this is actually like a working program, is this like a huge issue, knowledge about sexual issues or...
Yes.
Yeah? So what are the sort of the issues that seem to come up?
Well, I think there's sex ed taught in schools, and there's kind of parts of the health program that do talk about relationships and puberty and stuff, but there's a lot that people don't know, and that's the great thing about when we go away to this camp, they literally tell us everything there is to know about, you know, relationships and sex, and it's not just kind of all the gory stuff, it's just about trust and love and, you know, all those things. And so we kind of get all this information that we're kind of blessed to have because we wouldn't have known it otherwise, and there's a lot of things that teenagers do want to know but they can't find out through teachers or... You know what I mean? Mm. Some things are just kind of filtered because it's not what they want to teach at schools.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting. Why is it that you've got a sex education program in schools and it's not necessarily teaching and kids are going somewhere else, or a select group of kids are actually going somewhere else to find out about stuff?
Oh, I think that you can never have enough education. I think that the sex education they have at school is a very comprehensive program. But at the same time, as the students get older, there's no family planning clinic on Waiheke Island. And in Auckland, you can access these clinics. And here, this group of students have proved invaluable to spread the word about sexual health and how to be safe.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah.
Health classes are good. Sorry.
Yes.
Didn't want to undermine them too much.
No. Okay. It's interesting. I was actually at a meeting with a whole bunch of primary school teachers, and they were talking about sexual health as well. And they were saying that they, one of the ladies was saying that she felt really uncomfortable addressing some of these issues, and she didn't feel that it was the place, that school was the place to address them. So I suspect maybe there are some people who have, I don't know, either... moral or religious beliefs that that prevent them from talking about these things? Or are there issues around schools that there are certain things that aren't appropriate for a school curriculum because you might end up threatening people's beliefs, and so that's why you select people to go somewhere else?
Oh, I think that there's never too many resources, and what we're trying to do is build up a foundation of resources that the students can choose to access or choose not to access. I think that if a student wants some information and has somewhere else they can go for that information, it's great. And that's what we do really at the school, is we do have the sex education program and we also have the health clinic.
Lovely. So tell us then, so you guys are young people on Waiheke, and this film that I made was called Our Place, and it was about some of the great things about living on Waiheke but also some of the challenges. And so what do you see as some of the great things about living here?
Well, I mean, in the summertime, it's obviously really beautiful with all the beaches and stuff. I mean, we are blessed to live here. It's kind of, you take it for granted and people say, oh, Waiheke's such a beautiful place, and they want to come on holiday here, but we don't realise because we live here all the time. I mean, obviously there's the landscape and the beaches and stuff, which is, you know, a kind of beautiful thing. But, I mean, also the people. I think the good thing about Waiheke is that you almost feel like everybody's your friend, and that you're not going to encounter someone that really hates your guts. Everyone's just going to be friendly and nice and help you out. And so, I don't know, it's very helpful to live in a community where everyone looks after each other.
Mm,
I mean, even for teenagers. I mean, we're not kind of... Some teenagers don't really worry about all the community stuff and rah, rah, rah. They just kind of want to get on with their own thing. But even then, it's still nice to have a support network and a group of friends that are really going to... Which you find here, it's good.
I always think it's nice that my children probably know a family in every street on Waiheke.
Yes, definitely.
So if they did get into trouble, there is somewhere they could go.
Always, yeah.
So that's always quite nice.
Sorry, what's really nice today is that only I was buzzing with activities going on.
Yes.
So you've got a group of...
This thing's on.
Yes, you can't park outside the library today. And the Mauer Hall have got a lot of young people there and a rehearsal for a show, and the library have just had some beautiful singers, including Magda.
Oh, did you guys hear it?
Yeah, so Magda's one of the singers, and it's been a lovely day.
Wonderful, great. Oh, good. And so then what are some of the challenges of living here?
Yes, expenses. There are kind of... Things are generally a bit more expensive here because they are kind of better quality things, whereas you can go to town and if you kind of want... I mean, you can pretty much find anything in town. So that's one thing, is it's sort of, you're cut off a little bit from Auckland and all the resources. As Maggie said, I mean, there isn't a family planning clinic here, and there isn't, I mean, you know, there isn't an expanse of shops as they have in town. But, you know, I mean...
Mm. And you guys, are you quite involved in YATA as well? So that's youth and...
Youth against attitudes
towards alcohol.
Right. And I know there was a... there was a group at the high school, I presume it's ongoing, of kids who are involved in promoting issues around safe driving and alcohol.
Yeah, that's
the
SAD
team,
The SAD team, that's right. Are they still going?
Yes, they are.
Lovely. And are you noticing changes in attitudes, Maggie, or you guys, around alcohol and driving and safe drinking?
I think it's increasing awareness, and increasing awareness is certainly the way to go. And hopefully we are getting that message across to young people.
Every time someone, like a student, says, no, drink driving is not okay, that's an improvement, you know. Every time someone says it, that makes it go further and higher and spread. And that's what makes the change, when people do it bit by bit.
Mm. And do you feel more confident? Do people sort of feel more confident around saying they don't want to get into a car with someone who's driving? Yeah. And so, well, last question then. There's been a lot of television publicity around driving with people who've been smoking. Do you have any thoughts on that? Is that an issue for the island, that people are smoking weed and then getting into their cars and driving, and is that seen as being...
How do we answer this question? Acceptable?
I think that's too hard a question for a school nurse and a student. But always, you can involve the police. I think it's good to involve the police. We have a youth aid officer on the island, and they are very much part of the community. They come and join in with events at the school. They come to lots of meetings. We know them very well. And I think that Roger, our youth aid officer, would be somebody that could comment on that, because they're the ones that come across it late at night, and we could see where we stand on the island.
I guess it's always that thing of things that are illegal but people do, so it's a tricky one, isn't it? But I quite like the fact they're raising the profile of that issue in TV commercials, because I think it's something that people need to be aware of.
And there was that whole one about the drink, what was it, drink walking or something as well.
Oh, was
don't
that?
Walk home drunk because you might get hit by a car. And that's actually an issue as well. It's kind of those things that you don't think about.
The one I loved was, what was it, don't drink and fry. Yeah. Honestly, that had me in stitches. I just thought that was hilarious. But then having spoken to friends, they said that is actually quite an issue for them.
Apparently.
It sounded really bizarre.
Use the microwave.
Yeah. Anyway, good. Well, listen, I look forward to seeing, good luck with all those events.
Thank you. And
lots of people have been talking about the event down at the skateboard park. There's a lot of good vibes around that, eh? So well done.
Come along, everybody.
Yeah, great.
27th of May, next Sunday.
Great.
12
till 4, the 27th at the skateboard park. Mm-hmm. And also Thursday evening, Stefano's Pizzas, probably best to book. Friday night, a movie, The Hunger Games, starting at 7:30. Half price tickets there. And before that, 7:15, Our Place, the Auckland Council-funded movie on youth. And yes, I do remember I interviewed you. You were
hula-hooping.
Hula-hooping. Yes, indeed you were. Great. So thanks very much, everyone.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.